Welcome to Food Conversation, Season 3. And Food Conversation is a program about everything to do with food, starting with planting seeds and then on to growing and harvesting and distributing, and of course, the most important part, which is eating, with a special emphasis on establishing food sovereignty in the shoe swap. I'm your host, Warren Bell, and you're listening to us on CKVS FM 93.7, the voice of the shoe swap, community radio for the people, with the people, and by the people. And actually, that's a slogan that we actually stick to, because we got a lot of volunteers who work in this studio. Before we continue, I would like to acknowledge that we are living and working on the ancestral, unceded, and essentially stolen lands of the Shkrepmik people, and that fairly resolving this situation is an ongoing responsibility for us all. Today, my guest is the energetic executive director of the Shuswap Family Center, Patty Thurston, and I'm delighted to say that she is here in the studio with us today. Welcome, Patty.
Thank you. Good morning, Warren. How are you?
Absolutely terrific, and delighted to have you in the studio with us, where you can connect so much better than you can over the Zoom that we've been using for the last three quarters years. Far too long. Now, Patty heads up an organization that started itself on October 17th, 1988. I looked it up. And was called the Shuswap Family Resource and Referral Center, which has since been rebranded by Patty to its current name, the Shuswap Family Center, which is considerably less of a mouthful and simpler and entirely accurate. Patty, when you changed the name, what did you have in mind?
So it'd be easier to write on checks for donations.
There you are. Important consideration.
Excuse me. Because it was just a mouthful, and people would call it the Family Center or Family Resource Center. So we just thought Shuswap Family Center, nice little neat bundle. Our society name is still the Shuswap Resource and Referral Society, because we do so much with referrals and resources.
Yeah, you get a name out there and people get to know it. And yeah, even if they can't say it, they recognize
yeah.
it. Now, originally, like a number of people who've been on the show, you didn't spend all your life here, but you did start here in Gleneden. You were born and raised in Gleneden?
Well, I was born in Jasper, but Gleneden is where our family roots are. I've had a very privileged and blessed life of Jasper and Gleneden. Gleneden was the beginning of my love for growing food with my grandma and my dad's mom, so yeah.
That's an excellent segue into the nature of our show, Food Conversation. Brilliant.
Sometimes.
Yes. But then after Jasper, you had a very long and important career in another province, in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, Saskatchewan, yeah. I went there with the love of my life at the time and had my children. Again, we were rural and had a very diverse career, got my education, my undergrad, my grad degree in Saskatchewan, and worked for the Saskatchewan government.
And they were social work degrees.
Yeah, BSW and then therapeutic social workers.
So. What specifically is a therapeutic social worker?
Another 2 years of education.
There you are. That sounds good.
Yeah, so what I was specialized in at that time, and it was a beautiful program designed by Justice and the University of Regina, was I worked on the more forensic side. I was working with the criminal elements and a lot of the broken humans that go through our systems.
The criminal activities.
Mostly male, indigenous. Yeah. I spent a lot of time working.
Were you on the street?
I worked on the streets with the working girls, keeping them alive early in my career because, you know, Saskatchewan's cold in the winter. And then a lot of work with transitioning people from incarceration back into rehabilitation and then all the things that come with that. So
that was a nearly 30-year career mm-hmm. that you spent there. When you look back on that and see how it could have shaped your understanding of how the world is, What stands out?
Well, a lot. Like, I went out there I wanted to be a school counselor. That's where I started, actually, believe it or not. And then because of my ability to work with these young men, I got directed there and then chose to take Cree as a second language because I was living in Saskatchewan and that was my population. Excuse me. And I just was blessed in this privileged career of being able to change about every 5 years within the government and just move
change
to
change your specific role.
Yeah. And
so what kind of roles? I mean, there was this role in the street, meeting
mm-hmm.
people.
Then I worked with income assistance for a short period. I was a team lead. I became program of operations. But my favorite role was consult and providing accurate information on keeping people out of jail for recidivism, mm-hmm. you know, just bad breaches, et cetera,
for sure.
et cetera.
For yeah. sure. Yeah. What like, in terms of, you know, this constant flow of people, marginalized, suffering, you know, not well received by the system. Mm. What was the pattern that you were left with, this sort of, you know, this flow of people going through? What did you see happening in their lives?
Well, that there's no resources for, and still today, very minimal resources for children between ages of 6 and 12. Like, we do pretty good from 0 and 5, and then we come in for prevention and whatnot when we have adolescents. So that's 6 to 12. But generally, across the nation, we do not have services for men, which has been part of my ongoing fight, is that everyone needs to be healthy and healed through the world we live in.
There were some personal changes in your mm-hmm. life, and you, mm-hmm. you left Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. What, as you sort of moved away, what was that like? I mean, you'd invested 3 decades mm-hmm. of your life in some pretty intense kind of engagement work that it's not sort of working in retail. You're definitely involved with what's going on.
Well, it just wasn't feeding my soul anymore. When you get into management and in government, it's a different story. And I was being called to get back to the water. Like, every part of my being was like, get home to the water. And so I packed up and came home in my little SUV, filled to the top with a dog and my 19-year-old daughter at the time, and came home. And I honestly thought that when I came to BC, we were so progressive and amazing, I thought it'd be easy to find work and whatnot in my field, and was surprised to find that Saskatchewan back then, I'm sure things have changed, was so much more progressive than BC for ranches for kids, services, counseling, free addiction treatment throughout the province. And I was really surprised to find we didn't
because
have that here.
You thought this was
money.
The bucolic West Coast, and
yeah,
it would all everybody
exactly.
would take care of each
yeah,
other.
Yeah, I really did.
That's something that we should all bear in mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's often an opinion that BC is sort of lotus land, as they call it, and lotus land implies that everybody gets a lotus, mm-hmm. I suppose, but obviously some get more lotuses than others.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So, back here, you came, I think, in 2009 and looked for work, and eventually you did get a job mm-hmm. at the place that you're still working at.
Yeah, longest position I've ever been in, actually. Excuse me. Of course, I'd get choking now, but anyway. So, so I've been in the executive director position for almost 12 years. Mm-hmm. I started out as the intensive family therapist, yeah. And one of the things I noted when I first came home and was working is that we live in this beautiful garden and people were hungry. It really bothered me that there was all this food. And so Ebony Vardell and John McLeod and others from the Shoeshop Food Action Co-op, we got together and started working on the community teaching garden.
So that
garden.
Was one of your first things?
One of my very first things.
Okay, you started teaching garden.
Mm-hmm.
What was the, I mean, you can imagine what a teaching garden is all about, but what did you see as the goal of the teaching garden?
Well, the goal is to bring community together. There wouldn't be plots and little separate boxes and everyone come in and do their own thing. That would be a broad experience for everybody. Everyone that could come in that had skill or no skill would be there. We could all benefit from the food. Of course, I can't think of Leslie's last name, but she's the one that donated the land. And then now the people, Shelley, are still donating the land, and off we went.
Yes, Leslie Gurney.
Yes,
I
there it is.
Well,
thank
myself.
You. She was such a gift to our community, right?
Absolutely, very much so. A speech pathologist of mm-hmm. note, and one of the most important ones around here. The people who came to the garden in those early days, were they a cross-section? Was it people who liked gardening, or was some of the people that you saw food challenge and having issues that they needed support for also came as well?
Yeah, we had, once we got everything going and the food in the ground and growing, we had a really good traction. We're starting to get that traction of multiple groups throughout the community, from CMHA, Shuswap Children's Association, the Seniors Resource. People were coming to the garden in groups. SD83's Indigenous program was definitely involved, and it was really getting traction. And then, bam, the pandemic. Dun, 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 dun.
So let's talk a little bit. I had some involvement with the long name, the Shuswap Family Resource and Referral Center, when it started up in 1988, because it was at the time considered a very progressive concept and also enterprise. Because it was essentially looking at the notion that when you get sick or you get into accidents or you have emotional difficulties, it's often a lack of information. You've had experiences or teachings that misdirect you into thinking life is one way when it actually isn't that way. And the fundamental purpose was prevention rather than, you know, downstream, expensive downstream care, which of course is the model that operates in the so-called healthcare system. It's actually a disease care system. And the center was a very well thought out concept that it would somehow be there and would keep people out of difficulties by giving them both information about the way the world is and also resources that they could use. Today, you know, you came in sort of after it had been there for a couple of decades. What did you bring that, you know, looking back now after 10 years, you can say, well, I had certain ideas that shifted things somewhat in the way the centers worked?
Well, the first was food security and food sustainability. That became really important to me. And the other one was the community counseling. So free counseling for the community. And how I managed that was I have partnered and collaborated with many universities and our Okanagan College. So I get practicum students. So I have 4 or 5 practicum students all the ongoing throughout the year who are working on their master's in psychology, counseling, nurses, et cetera, et cetera. And they provide free service. So it's this win-win situation for everybody. The students come in and get to provide or get their hours
they
in.
Gain
and then
experience.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm a field site supervisor. And so, and I have a group today, which is usually starts at 9:30, but today it's starting at 10. Every Friday, my practicum students and I sit in a clinical setting and go over their weeks. So it's worked really well for 10 years.
Having collaborations like you just outlined with academic institutions and bringing people from those institutions into the community kind of fits in. I looked at the website and found the actual philosophy statement. The mission statement is pretty straightforward, but the philosophy statement really, I think, sums up what you're talking about. We work with individual, this is the statement, we work with individual and family strengths to encourage personal growth and change towards well-being and a healthy community. And it seems to me that by inviting people from other places to come here and develop their skills with people in the community, there's this community side to it all the way down the line.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. And the third thing that I brought was, the Poverty Law Advocates, the Law Foundation, approached me in 2017 to be a site to support that.
Speaking of approaching, do you find now that you have organizations or entities in the community, or, you know, here and elsewhere, coming in and saying, we'd like to work with you?
Yes.
And is that something that, I mean, I can't imagine that it's doing anything other than strengthening what you do in the center.
Absolutely.
And also giving them something.
Yes, it's I love working with everybody, being inclusive, and, you know, I'm nosy. I like to see what's going on everywhere.
A very admirable quality. Nosiness, all the nosiness people out there, take a point. You've just won a point. So we started talking about food. And
yes.
One of the comments that you made the other day was that food is love. Food is a tangible demonstration of concern for another person. If you give them food, you give them something that it's very hard to not like, unless it's in a plastic package and it comes from a machine. But otherwise, it is a true gesture of giving something that is a package of goodness to them.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been a bit of a thing? I know there's other programs at the center that involve food.
Yes.
Why don't we kind of run through some of them, because there's more than one, and they're all doing that kind of work. So we talked about the community garden, and part of what the community garden is associated with is gleaning. Mm-hmm. So why don't you talk a little bit about that, because that's...
Got it off the ground somewhat. Ebony Vardell did a lot of the work on that one, and it's again this volunteer piece. So the gleaning works that we go to someone's home, they get a third of the product, the picker gets a third of the product, and the community gets a third of the product. And it's just, we can't get the volunteers, so it just lost traction.
Really? So just to go around to these mm-hmm. people's homes mm-hmm. or properties or whatever?
Yeah.
But it's a grand idea. Yeah,
I agree, and I'm hoping as we get out of the pandemic that we get back onto that. Melanie Bennett, who's really spearheading the community teaching garden, has taken it to a place I couldn't even have dreamed of. So I know that's on her list of things, and probably should Food Action Co-op as well. So,
isn't it interesting that I looked at the growing patterns in this region? And it's two-thirds hay and crops for distribution elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Two-thirds to three-quarters. And the vegetable production, you know, the stuff that your mother tells you to eat, is like 5% max of the total. It's amazing how we've changed the food distribution system to make it hard for people. So let's talk about not just growing it, but cooking it. Community kitchens.
So one of the great things about the new building or the new location is the kitchen is on the main floor, because in the other building it was downstairs. So that limited so many people from accessing. So now we have this kitchen and we're open again. We started with the youth kitchen, which it goes on Thursday nights. So everybody today, on Friday between 11 and 1, you can purchase some baked macaroni and cheese, and all that money goes back to the youth kitchen. Just a little plug for them.
That's a good plug.
So that's at 681 Marine Park Northeast. So the goal is to get the kitchens going again. The family community kitchen that we had, which was unique, that kids were allowed to be in the kitchen. So apparently this was a unique thing. And so we were always busy. Like our Friday mornings used to be just full and loud, and the smells were amazing. I just loved it. And so to get that back in there, and then we'd like to start doing some workshops and some canning workshops and dehydrating workshops. And then in the hopes with the dehydrating, because I do a lot of emergency food, as we've talked about, is to create food packages, healthy food packages for our Living Rough, so they don't need, you know, boiling water or can opener, and they can have some dried meat and some fruit and nuts and things like that. So a little bit healthier.
Living Rough, I think, why don't we pause for a moment and focus on that? Because that's an element in our community that a lot of people either don't know about, don't pay attention to, and sometimes don't want to know about.
Yeah.
How many people would you say in this community are living rough, meaning they don't have, they're basically, we used to call it homeless, I think, but are basically living in that mode?
Over 100 that I know of.
Over 100.
And there's so many that we don't know of that are like couch surfing. Those are usually our youth. And then that biggest hip population currently has been senior women. Sadly, that is one of the biggest hit demographics. And what's happening is people are buying up homes to flip them. So you have women who are living on moderate incomes who are now beginning their 60 days notice to move out. And as you know, the two basic needs that we're struggling with is housing and food, right off the bat. So,
what happens to the women when their houses are sold?
It's a really sad story, because if you're a senior woman, shelters are meant for children, and I don't negate that. Kids need to be safe. They've got to find family or take a walk down East Hastings and see the number. I was just there in February, and the biggest number of homeless that I seen were Caucasian senior women.
And they were out on the street?
They were living on the street.
What? Okay, I'm going to pause here for another moment. What is that like? I mean, I get the sense that because of your work in Saskatchewan, you're attuned to the street scene. Mm-hmm. You look and you see things that it's like a painter looking at a painting. Yes. Says, see that over there, that way that angle goes. And you look on the street and you see people, and from their demeanor and from their gait and their clothing, you sense that they are not housed. They are not secure. They mm-hmm. are, a lot of their life is spent there.
Well, for sure. And also over 16,000 people walk through our doors every year, and they just tell their story. And so the notice, what I have noticed is the trend in the last months have been senior women coming in terrified, because what do you do?
Because services for older women are basically Canada Pension and the OAS, mm-hmm. and then you're on your own.
Yes. Mm. So a lot of these people, I think it's $1,500 a month. And I don't know what you know about rent in Salmon Arm, but I mean, that means there's no money for food.
Yeah, that's right. No, I see people like mm-hmm. this, some senior women, certainly young men,
yes.
Living, they're couch surfing. One of my patients was living in a tent on Little Mountain for yes. several years, unbeknownst to anybody, because he was, you know, off in the bush. And the support system is really abysmal.
Yes, it is.
I think it's time to make a plug for the Universal Guaranteed Income, which has been approved in some parts of the world. There's been experimental ventures in that direction. And I think in terms of the preponderance of issues that we're talking about with respect to insecurity of, you know, home and food is actually the primary remedy and the positive. Okay. You tell me your story about it, because I think it's a...
Well, I'm with you on that. And I know that conversation brings out fear for the middle class, because I think their taxes are going to go up. But I hope that everyone can understand what it's going to do is make everything more available, and there'll be less issues and less health issues and less mental health issues, less addictions. You know, if we could eliminate childhood trauma, which we can't because we're just humble humans, but we could do a lot of work, and everyone being able to have food and a house and a place to rest their head in safety has been my dream since I can remember.
Every single study of a guaranteed universal income has shown precisely what you said. There mm-hmm. has been no negative information.
Ever.
It's always shown the same thing. Mm-hmm. We just have to cross a little bridge in our minds, which
exactly.
we're reluctant to
we
do.
We really are.
So, food is love. Community kitchens, the youth kitchen is a very lively place. It's teaching people how to make mm-hmm. and process food and eat it. And then there's food for people who don't access healthy, fresh food, the Good Food Box program. Talk mm-hmm. about that a little bit, Patty.
Well, that is thanks to Scotia McLeod and Bob Papworth. Give him a shout out. He gives, we have a very big financial contribution to the Family Center every year. And when I started as ED, I thought, well, I want him to be able to see where that money's going. So I purchased 25 Good Food Boxes every month and have for 10 years to give to the community. So once a month, fresh vegetables are given out, especially in the winter, which is because I have the garden in the summer, but indeed, in the winter.
How does that distribution system work? Where does it come from and how does it get to the people?
So for the Good Food Box?
Yeah.
So there's DeMille's, Pedro's. I don't know that much about that end of it. That's Joyce Henderson. Okay. I'll give her a shout out because she's still rocking that Good Food Box and they need volunteers, people, seriously. Packing and loading those boxes every once a month is a lot of work, and they definitely need more volunteers down there. So they buy in bulk, and then it costs me $15 a box, and then I just give that for free.
And the food is purchased from local producers. Mm-hmm.
DeMille's, Pedro's, and I know I'm probably missing the other people. Sorry.
DeMille's, Brad DeMille told us several times that he's got something like 150 local food producers that bring food for his retail operation. Mm-hmm. So he actually knows just about everybody around here who grows food and has some connection with them. So the food box, then where do they pick it up at?
St. Joe's Catholic Church, the third Thursday of the month.
Okay.
And then for people I'll go grab whatever's left in my load because not everybody has mobility. We don't want to even talk about our transit system because that's a whole nother show.
our wonderful transit system.
So seniors, women who are 8 months pregnant, 9 months pregnant, they just can't get there. So we'll pick them up and drop them off. And through the pandemic, I delivered. Mm-hmm. I delivered. We actually got a delivery person to go
Sounds
and
like
deliver.
Lauren Reimer in Friday AM. Mm-hmm. He'd hands out the bundles of Friday AM. Angela Dixon, what role has she played?
Well, Angela came to the Family Center in the practicum. She was working on her BSW, and she is an organic farmer from the Lower Mainland. And so when she was done her practicum, I asked her if she'd like to be my food security coordinator, and she jumped at the opportunity. I don't have a lot of money for that. So the two unfunded programs I have are the counseling and food security. So that's all about donating and grant writing. So she's jumped on this, and like last night I was in the building, and like again the aromas were magnificent, but the laughter and the noise and watching these people having so much around discussion around food and learning so much, which is priceless,
warms the cockles of one's heart. Food in the schools.
Yeah, so that is something.
See, I'm just giving you cues, and you can tell the story. It's wonderful, Patty.
Thank you. So one of my goals is, and it was getting late in the year, and again, everything just slammed shut, but I was working with two gentlemen from Habitat for Humanity, and we were just starting a breakfast program. So on Friday mornings, we'd have a hot breakfast, and we'd like to get that into the schools, but also give it to the living rough as well, or anyone who needs food. You don't have to be living rough. But so then we just have this hot meal on Friday mornings for breakfast. So that's sort of lost traction, but I'm really hoping that we can get that momentum back for the fall. Rotary gives a lot of money for the lunches for food for school, and I'm pretty sure there's a few others, but the fact that we're giving have to have food in our schools and it's coming from outside resources again is another question that we have. Like, schools need to have kitchens and food. I know I've been around the planet like a lot of decades, but when I went to school, that wasn't an issue. Food wasn't an issue, right? And I know I was privileged. I know that. But seeing little kids without food, and how can they learn? How can they be healthy? And if your cupboard's empty, you have high anxiety.
Yeah.
Right.
In every way.
Every way.
As a family physician and an avid reader of all sorts of stuff, I've seen a ton of evidence of how learning is impaired, both when you don't have enough food in your stomach, but also when you are not feeling good, when mm-hmm. you come from a family where there's dysfunction because there's disadvantage.
Yes.
It aggravates everything. Now, some people just need some means to get food right now. And if I recall correctly, you hand out $1,000 worth of food vouchers or food.
Grocery cards, yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, monthly. I have two funders that donate about $500 every month to Wendy's and A&W because they're downtown. They don't have to get buses. And to Askew's, I buy a lot of grocery cards from Askew's and No Frills just for access. Bus goes there and people can get there. And one of the reasons we buy a lot from Askew's is they have the deli, which for our living rough, they can go and get that packaged sandwich and some fruit and vegetables, etc., those type of things.
What do you think, what do you feel, rather, when you see people who just come and say, I don't have no money to buy food?
Well, you know, as many years as I've been working, I think it's 40 years now, well, it still breaks my heart.
Yeah, yeah. It's not easy.
No. It's Elma, my front lady, she's amazing. She's this beautiful face that every human gets to see when they come in the family center, and she hears all the stories. So I can't imagine what...
She sometimes has to go home and rest.
Yeah, she definitely does.
Seniors, connecting to seniors, we talked about seniors, senior women being in jeopardy right now, but you've got a possible link to the Seniors Resource Center, somehow linking to them.
Yeah, well, we like to, like, again, we're just getting back on our feet. Everyone's like out and about. And so Senior Resource Centers, they're looking at our place for using the kitchen to just, you know, have fun and just connect that way. They'll probably go to the garden. One of the things that I've struggled with forever is the Shuswap Family Center is for everyone. It's not, we got this, like, I think maybe because of our signage when it was on TransCanada, the very large pregnant woman on the front, that we were for young families. But we're for everybody. Like, everyone comes from a family. And so I'm glad to finally see that seniors are feeling comfortable walking through the family center doors, and men too. I mean, I just noticed there was more seniors women lately, but there's a lot of senior males that are also... were either hurt in their industry or their trade and are living on a fixed income again, trying to survive in Salmon Arm.
Do the senior women who you've come to see appearing in the community who are really strapped, who've lost their homes and are now sort of halfway onto the street, do they understand that you're there, that the family center is there? Do they know to come?
It's getting better. People like yourself and other physicians definitely share that we're here. I have a great relationship with most of the physicians in town that know about us. I mean, because there's a lot of new physicians in town that I don't know. And so we get a lot of referrals from physicians, definitely from the school, but that's for younger. So I'd say our seniors hear about it from physicians and other people in town because they've gone to the doctor.
Have you yet gone and done a presentation to the medical staff?
There was a time, a long time ago, I was in collaboration and working very closely with the SNO, what's that acronym?
Oh, Shuswap
North Okanagan Physicians. Yeah.
Division Family Practice.
So yeah, they actually provided $7,000 at one time for me to train my SAPE worker, my sexual abuse intervention. That's what I went to speak to them about. So to train a SAPE worker through BC Justice is $7,000. And they gave us that money. And so I had...
The reason I say that is because information is power, and our medical staff, you know, there's these days a lot of focus on sort of intra-professional issues and patient attachment, that kind of thing. But it seems to me that it would be a very productive thing to just lay out for medical practitioners the actual situation that is pertaining to their community, that is actually... You know, the trends that you're seeing, senior women, men living on the street, food insecurity all over the place, you know, that kind of thing. Speaking of food insecurity, we've touched on a little bit, there's the whole issue of the pandemic and how it affected things. What did that little tsunami do to the work of the Shuswap Family Center?
Well, we never actually, we was locked down by law on March 13th. Actually, I shut down the building because I'd been talking to a friend in Italy. And then the 15th, we were all shut down. So we were still seeing people by appointment, but we were not there. And then we went back to work by appointment. I got the building ready. It took me until June 13th to get everything completely satisfied.
June 13th of 2021?
2020.
No, 2020. Okay.
Yeah, 2020. Okay. So we opened up to the public on June 13th or 15th, 2020. And we haven't missed a beat. And at one point, we were the only family resource center open in BC, which came to me. I heard that from a government minister. I can't think of who it was at this time, but yeah.
And that was because they were kind of abiding by the strictest interpretation of the rules?
Or their building couldn't, like if we had stayed on 181 Trans-Canada, we wouldn't have been able to open. We were too tight. So there's no way we'd been able to do what I was able to do because of Marine Park. I designed it for scooters. I think I've shared this with you, but then it worked beautifully for the pandemic for social distancing.
Because the space is wider.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very wide and open, and I ionized the air as well. I felt that the flow of the air was important, getting the sanitation centers up and following all those protocol, which, you know.
Fascinating. It's interesting how what appears at the time to be designed to solve one problem ends up solving a problem that was completely unexpected.
You didn't say, right?
For the next pandemic, we'll have this ready. I think we can only do justice to the work you're doing by running through two things. One is the programs, the range of programs that you have, and the other is I think it's at some point I'd like to list all the organizations of one sort and another, governmental, non-governmental, that you connect with, because it's pretty much every entity in the community and a few that you've mentioned today that have no direct connection to sort of social community development, but nevertheless are part, such as Scotia McLeod, you know, giving money.
Well, we had our online auction, and our community is amazing. Like every time I put a shout out or need, like someone's house is burnt down or someone needs anything, it's there. Like our community gives back so much. Like I'm in awe of what Salmon Arm has given back to the community.
It's funny because each community has a distinct profile, and you don't know that until you live there for 25 years. So, and we have been, and many others have been struck. I had a patient, one of the very first patients I had, who went all over, his father, rather, went all over British Columbia looking for what he thought was the nicest place to live, and settled on Salmon Arm because it's got everything. It's got the seasons, it's got water, it's got mountains, it's got nice people, it's got farmland. It was just...
Yeah, we live in paradise.
We do. And as I said at the beginning of the show, we have to remember that we basically took it away from the indigenous folk who live here. And we really have to work hard on that. Do you have any connection to the indigenous community with respect to food in particular?
Yes, definitely. Part of the community teaching garden has been utilized definitely by the bands around the community. Yes, it was a slow process, I'm going to say. So I started working the breakfast programs at Pierce Point and volunteering and becoming a face in their community so that, because Glen Eden and Pierce Point, that's my life. I grew up, there we were. So that was the beginning. And then I was seeing that our community was becoming more resembling our community. Like when I first moved home, I was shocked that we were surrounded by eight nations and there was no indigenous faces working or shopping or going to the bank. And I was perplexed by that. And so that was, and then coming from Saskatchewan, where I'd been for all that time, I was curious. And made some connections and friendships, and we have a strong relationship with our nations around the community.
And we're very proud of the fact that we have a strong connection to Indigenous programming, and we really have plans to do much more in that area. There's so much that could be told that hasn't been told so far.
Well, the stories.
Lordy. I'm just going to run through. This is like the program we had on the radio, TV, Reach for the Top, Start Snappers.
One of my favorite shows.
So I'm going to name the service that you offer, and maybe you can just give a brief outline of what it's involved. So the Adoption Resource and Support Service.
So that is for people in the community that are either have adopted, want to adopt, international adopt. I have Kathy Fisher, who's this beautiful human that is there to support. Oh, and then if we have adoption placement breakdowns or the biological children aren't as happy about the adoption. So we go in and do that work, and it's amazing. Mm. It's beautiful watching these blended families grow. But my the pandemic, again, traction, they have two or three parties every year, pizza party and a swim party. And a couple years ago, I'm at the beach, and it's an adoption barbecue and a support barbecue, and these two little guys are been coming for years, and the one little guy looks at the other guy and goes, "Wow, you're adopted too." It was just like that beautiful moment I got, you know, to see.
Normalized adoption.
Exactly.
Child and youth mental health outreach program.
Oh, that's probably our biggest and longest. That's Vlad Polyak. He's a brilliant clinician. Probably our longest waiting list is for our child and youth.
Is that a general feature that resources matching demand is a constant issue?
I have never seen a demand for counseling in my whole career like I've seen in the last year. Hmm. Like it's, I have intakes like this. Well, I guess you can't see, you're on the radio, but stacked high, very high.
I'm holding my hands as far as I can.
A lot of intakes, at least five a day looking for services. Hmm. And it's, yeah, you know, we can't. So we try and find resources where we can.
The Community Support Counseling Program.
That's the one I was talking about with the practicum students. So it's just a beautiful program of giving back to the community. Yeah.
And the next one is, I think, very creative. Grandparents Raising Grandchildren Network.
Yeah, so it's a very, very small contract with the government. It needs to be a lot bigger. And it probably, there are a lot of grandparents raising grandchildren. It's Kathy Fisher is also the overseer of this. But there needs to be more. Hmm. There just needs to be more.
I have a number of patients who are in that position. They are grandparents and they're raising one of their children's children. And they do it, you know, the best they can, mm-hmm. but they're often quite isolated.
They have to go back to work.
Absolutely.
Like it's...
Or they're retired and they're really... Their age is not the age that is good for running around
exactly.
after a toddler.
Exactly.
Intensive Family Preservation.
So that is actually a brilliant program in BC. I'd never seen anything like it. So it was designed so for families that are about to fall apart and the ministry needs to get involved. So they get to workers in for six to 8 hours a week so that the families can stay together instead of the children going in the system.
Kind of gluing them back together mm-hmm. before they fly apart.
Intense therapeutic work.
Well, it's right there. Intensive Family Preservation. Now, the next program on the list is one that I've watched founder and stumble because of lack of funding and support, and that's the Legal Advocacy Program. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a bit, Penny.
So, yeah, I was given a call in 2017 from Bill McIntosh. I think he's a local from here that had left, and now he's an environmentalist lawyer, I believe. He contacted me. He didn't share who told him this, but he said, "I was told to talk to you because you would be willing to have this discussion." And I jumped at the opportunity of having like poverty advocates here. We need family advocate as well. That's just a plug out there if anyone's listening.
But we hope they are.
So Gudrun Mulkvist is the full-time PLA, poverty law advocate, and has been brilliant. What a asset to our community, and her abilities to just, she does so much for people with so little. And Connor Mounts is the other advocate. He works and the same. So working at a job where they're people are at their lowest and lowest, financially, food, health, and these two humans find them and work them through litigation, tribunals, all kinds of things that you and I would just go turtle, and they do all that paperwork and get their voice out there.
Yes, and I've watched patients struggle with that when they don't have that kind of support, and sometimes they just say, oh, I give up, I can't do anything.
Well, have you looked at the forms?
Oh,
oh my gosh. Like for your disabled form is like, it takes four. Anyway, you've seen it. It's disgusting.
It's too many pages. Too many questions.
Too many questions.
Yeah, I filled out the persons with disability form over and over again. It's 13 pages for the parts that I do, if I do the doctor part and the support person part. And the questions are often demeaning. They're like,
totally.
How often do you go to the bathroom? And can you go to the bathroom on your own? Or do you need help to buy groceries? Or it's looking at your life in minute detail. Actually, it was developed by a previous government to try and catch, as they called it, people who were malingering under this and receiving social services that they didn't deserve. And the stance of the government at the time was that there were a lot of these malingerers around. When they actually implemented the persons with disability process, it turned out there was a very tiny proportion. And it wasn't that they were malingering, is that they were misclassified into one support program when they should have been in another one.
Exactly.
So it was a complete cock-up, and it's still around. Okay, here's a program I know something about, Nobody's Perfect Parenting Program. Mm-hmm. I've had a number of patients go through the program.
Oh, that's 0 to 5. Again, Kathy Fisher, she wears many hats. So we provide that workshop twice a year, 1 year, and 3 times a year the next year. It's the way the contract is designed, and it's always full. I mean, we're looking forward. They got to go to Blackburn Park for the last meeting of the last group because everything's been online, right? So that we're looking forward to face-to-face.
Indeed, a lot of people are. Mm-hmm. Now, this is somewhat similar in the next two programs. The next one is Parents Together.
Well, that actually, that's misinformation on my website, sorry. it was a great program. And I think it's still being ran out of a Spiral Youth, which is awesome. So the connection is that there's a youth with a worker, and then the parents have a facilitator, and they speak the same language, right? So parents are getting educated, and the youth are getting support, and then hopefully that parent-teen conflict can be mitigated.
So it's a conflict resolution process. Well, that's, we can't have too many of those.
No.
Some people have conflicts where they pull out weapons and start blowing people up, and it's a very bad way to do it. That's a shout out to a process we will not mention. Pregnancy Outreach Program.
Wow.
Been around for a long time.
Yeah, that is, that's Ida Herder is the coordinator there. And then we have Judy and Colleen and Amber who work the different areas. So they do outreach to Malaqua, Sorrento, and Enderby. So we have satellite offices, not in Sorrento so much, but definitely in Sicamous, Malaqua, and Enderby. So we're at about 60 to 80 babies a month. It's 0 to like conception to 6 months is the program. They have a Tuesday group, which runs in the morning, where moms can get together and network, and it doesn't matter how old the kids are at that point. And then we have a walking group, which is starting this Friday. So at one point, we were the fittest pregnant community deemed by Pregnancy Outreach and the health, interior health, because they'd almost walked across Canada in kilometers, and then we got hit by the pandemic again. Like, seriously. We have a very fit, active group. And the shout out for the Walk for Fit would go to an employee that no longer lives in our community, was Trish Johnson. She really took the Pregnancy Outreach Program and made it like what it is. And then Ida took it and made it even, from her lens and, different, but
sounds
just
like
as amazing.
You get some wonderful people working at the center.
Oh, I have a dream team. I have the most beautiful people I could work with. I love going to work every single day.
Well, this next group may be one of the groups that is a challenging one, but I'm sure it works in collaboration with many other community groups, and that's the Sexual Abuse Intervention Program.
Well, we need about 100 more hours of that. It's a small contract, but I can tell you that, sadly, that we need pretty much every case, if not every other case, is somehow touched by the intrusive sexual abuse of the world we live in, which is a whole nother conversation, I'm sure, because I have a lot. This is where my beginnings, well, I thought I was going to be a school counselor, but my beginnings went with working girls and then the children that are in the industry that sickens me to no end. But that industry, as much as we've been fighting it, we just can't get a grip on it. It's like it just keeps growing and growing. And with the social media aspect of it, it's mind-boggling, actually.
Yeah, it
has. And it's almost becoming normalized.
Yeah, I think along with diversity, there's a kind of perverse sense that diversity can mean that anybody can do anything with anybody, mm-hmm. which often entails a lot of abusive and dysfunctional relationships. Mm-hmm. Here's one with a group with an interesting acronym. Stop Now and Plan.
SNAP. I love SNAP. It's a brilliant program that was designed out of Toronto with the city police. It's basically CBT, but it's the 6 to 12. This is the group. And so parents and children have to commit to 13 weeks. This is a big deal, right? And so they come in, and again, we're just trying to get traction again. We got it started, and then again, this pandemic just stopped us cold. So we're getting it back, and we're going to go back in the fall. And parents love to come. They don't think they want to come, but then they start coming, and then their kids are in this separate group, and then they have this wonderful language, and the results are just amazing of harm reduction for young men that are already deemed in the school system a grade one is trouble. Right.
Yes, we have a capacity to pass judgment quickly and retract judgment slowly.
Yeah.
There's three more programs here, but the Connect Parent program, mm-hmm. And then the Family Development Program and the Young Parent Support Program. So they're all those are sort of family parenting mm-hmm. kind of programs.
Yes. Go ahead.
What are the gist of those three?
Well, Connect is an attachment education parenting. We just finished a group for 10 weeks. So it's education. Parents come and learn a little bit about themselves and learn about attachment and attachment parenting. So quite education focused. Young parent support is we're not seeing as many teen parents as we have in the past. Probably with the morning after pill, we're just not seeing as many young teen parents. When I started, that was a big part of my job was young moms. And so, and then the other family development is a ministry contract as well, where we do one-to-one support. Sometimes they're in the courts or they're in jail, so we're doing supervised visits. And then that last stage of transition where their kids get to go home, hopefully.
I don't think we could do justice to the work you're doing, Patty, and to the center itself without just, I'm just going to rattle off a list of the organizations and then you can, you can tell me what this vast plethora of groups have done for the work of the center. So they include the Safe Society, that's the Shuswap Family Emergency Society, Aspiral Youth Partners, Community Futures, Victim Services BC, Salmon Arm Economic Development Society, Shuswap Child Care Resource and Referral, Shuswap Children's Association, Public Health Nurses, a special association, Shuswap Transit System, School District Number 83, North Okanagan, Okanagan College, Shuswap Food Action Society, HealthLink BC, Shuswap Settlement Services Society, Harmony Haven, Respite Services for Caregiver Journey, I have a particular program for that, mm-hmm. Building an Online Anti-Poverty Community, Click Law, which helps you solve problems that are legal, Need More Law Help, that's through the Courthouse Library. For Men, About Men, Health Strategies for Managing and Preventing Depression, that's a health mental health support group. BC211, a nonprofit organization specializing in free information and referral regarding community government and social services in BC. Blue Wave Foundation, formed in 2007, and that addresses the importance of early intervention and education for youth, families, and society about mental health issues. Stop Overdose, which is obvious, and counseling treatment services through Seminar Mental Health. Is there anybody in this community or any organization? Tell me if there's one you know you haven't worked with.
Well, there's two that aren't on there that were...
But you do work.
that we just haven't... Well, we're trying to update our website right now. It hasn't been easy. One, to do a fillable intake, but the pain clinic and is putting in their information on there, so it's a one stop from our website that you can get all the resources local. And the other one is we're in the Naloxone site, so that's the other piece. So it's just community, right? Like all these people, we all work with each other, so their list looks the same, only I'm on it. You know, it's a small town, and we all wrap around as best we can. We're trying to be as creative as we can for every family that comes through if we can't meet that need.
And, you know, there have been organizations doing that in the past, but what I sense here is that it's actually working together, not just sitting down and having a conversation, but actually saying, okay, can you do this for us? Can we do this for you? And that kind of
thing. Absolutely.
It's a working relationship.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, all I can say is if anybody who's been listening to the show today has had an earful of information and insight into what's going on in Salmon Arm and area and some of the parts of our community that we don't spend a lot of time paying attention to, but there are a lot of people in this community who are actively engaged in being parts of those parts that we don't pay as much attention to. And Patty, you've really laid it out clearly for us, and for that I can only thank you, and I thank you on behalf of the community at large and the radio station to have you here and to talk about these things. It's really been a wonderful thing.
Thank you.